Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here. Steve Arterburn with Dr. John Townsend and your phone calls today on New Life Live. Thanks for joining us today for New Life.
Welcome to a classic program from the archives of New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life is celebrating its 30th year of ministry this year, 30 years of transforming lives one at a time thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. New Life is dedicated to helping you in life's hardest places. All of our calls for this classic program have already been taken, but if you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Now here's Steve.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here, and joining me, Dr. John Townsend. Hi, John.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great today, and I got to tell you, I was thinking of just how famous I am. I was in a Denver bathroom changing planes, and this is how famous I am. A guy walks right up to me in the bathroom and goes, "Don't you know John Townsend?" Now, that's how famous I am, John, that somebody recognized me for knowing you. And I said, absolutely. I was proud to say I did.
He actually was a big fan. It was a guy I owed money to in Denver, so yeah. I've been trying to avoid him.
Big fan of yours. Hey, I want to mention to everybody that I'm going to be preaching at Heartland Church this Father's Day. And one of the things that I'm going to be talking about is something that maybe we could just touch on here for a second, John. And that is, I'm going to extrapolate the passage in Matthew 25 of when you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it unto me, to challenge fathers to do for their children what needs to be done as if they are the least of these, which they are. Because when you've done it for your children, you've done it for Jesus. And when you haven't done it for your children, you have neglected Christ in so doing.
Absolutely. You know, when you think about it, fathering is, you know, it's a great honor and all that, but it's also a really, really heavy hat to wear, and we need to really wear the hat. There's a lot of work involved, and a lot of that is like you're talking about the passage, is doing for our kids what they can't do for themselves. That's what the least means, you know. Yeah. It means having structure when they don't have it and they're in tantrums, or mom's handing off to you because she's tired, or when the kids need that wrestling or comforting or whatever. We really need to be there for every inability our children have.
That's right. And, you know, when Christ said, "I was hungry and you fed me," you need to stop and think, well, what are my children in need of? What do I need to be feeding them? Such as, certainly I need to be feeding them more than bread. Man does not live by bread alone. I need to be feeding them an example of a godly man, for one thing. If I've got a son, I need to be the example for that son. But also, I need to realize there's a good chance my daughter is going to grow up and marry somebody a lot like me. Mm-hmm. And I need to be the guy that I want her to marry. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we stop here as we focus on Father's Day and say, okay, Father's Day's coming. This is a great Father's Day to say, you know what, maybe I didn't do everything perfectly, but I'm willing to make some changes.
I'll give you number one.
All right.
Dads, listen.
Dads, listen.
We teach, we preach, we give examples, we encourage, we exhort. That's all great. But dads, learn how to listen. There's no higher value than listening.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'll give you number two, and that is that if I find myself one of these people that isn't doing it for my kids, maybe I should ask, why is that, and get some help for that very thing there. You are listening to New Life Live with Dr. John Townsend. His latest book, How to Be a Best Friend Forever. And Steve Arterburn here. Latest book for singles, Is This the One?
My story includes multiple physical and emotional affairs.
Every day, men struggle with sexual integrity. Impure thoughts, strip clubs, pornography.
My wife found out that I had betrayed her. She insisted that I would go to the everyman's battle. I had some idea, perhaps, of what to expect, but I had no idea that it would have the impact on me that it did. There's just something about the way that you meet in a large group and then the smaller breakout groups. And the sharing is just something that I've never experienced before.
To register or to find out more, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433 or log on to newlife.com.
This is the first time in my life that I ever felt comfortable in sharing the real me with other men. In my mind, it is one of the most critical things that a guy can do in his recovery.
1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome back to this classic program from the archives of New Life Live. If you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. John Townsend, taking your phone calls, and let's go right to the phones. We'll start off on line one with Tanya from Riverside, California. She listens online, and we're glad that she does. Hi, Tanya. Tanya? Hello?
Hey there. How are you?
Great. Thanks for coming back and joining us on the program.
Thank you so much. Well, I appreciate you guys taking my call.
Sure.
And the reason why I'm calling is because I need an advice as to how to get unstuck from my dating relationship.
Okay, what's going on?
Well, I tend to get very attached to the people that I usually date, and I get very fearful to be alone. I get very fearful to end up the relationships, and I find myself in this vicious cycle of just not, holding on to them for too long.
Mm-hmm. All right, now are you in a relationship right now?
Yes.
And you need to get out of it?
Well, the thing is that sometimes I get very fearful about committing to someone. And when I start feeling that it's getting very serious, I just try to run away.
So you're kind of stuck on two ways, Tanya. You feel dependent or needy for a relationship, but then when something gets serious, you run away.
Yes. And and there have been occasions where, in the past, I've talked to more than one guy at the same time, and it's just a very vicious cycle, and I need to be able to break free from it.
Sure.
I don't like to feel dependent on my to be happy to be with someone.
Right. Fortunately, what you're describing has been well researched, Tanya, and there are a lot of good answers for it, and it's called the need-fear conflict. Need-fear. Where I need someone and I feel these dependencies and longings and wanting to be close and wanting to be connected and safe, and if it gets too committed, then I begin to be fearful, either that they'll leave me or hurt me or find something about me that's not good. Does that seem to be your experience?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Can I ask a sort of a diagnostic question?
Yes.
How healthy and how many are your same-sex gal relationships? Your good ones.
I have a lot of girlfriends, but it's very hard for me to be really open about this issue because it's kind of embarrassing.
No, I didn't mean it that way. I'm not talking about guys. I mean just how, like, okay, let's suppose you fall in love with a guy, all right, and he's the great guy and you love him deeply, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And that guy goes into a very deep room in your heart, okay, maybe the deepest room.
Mm-hmm.
He gets in really deep. You got me?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that guy gets in room, let's say 1 out of 10, and 10 is the deepest, he gets in room 10 or 9, that's way deep, right?
Yeah.
Okay, how deep do your girlfriends get? What number do you give them? What room do they get in?
No more than 5.
That's it.
Hmm.
Okay.
Hmm.
Why would that be, Tanya?
I don't know.
Let me ask it a different way. When a girlfriend wants to go deeper and get to know you're at more vulnerable levels and want to know things that are deeper inside you, what do you get afraid of that you would not let a girl or a gal or a woman be in room 9 or 10?
Probably that will be rejected.
Okay.
And prejudged.
You're feeling something right now. You sound teary. What's happening right now? Has that happened before?
No, I've always received good support, but there's always this thing in the back of my head that does not allow me to go deeper because I want to pretend to be this someone. And for me to be able to reveal those things to someone else, it kind of puts me on a weak spot.
So which parent were you closer to?
I just grew up with my mother.
Okay. Well, then here's my working idea. When a little girl grows up with a mom and without a dad, there are deep, deep longings for a dad. Right? Every girl wants, like Steve just talked about Father's Day. That probably brought some feelings in you. The longings are greater for the father than they are the mother because we always want the parent that we don't have. God made us that way. We're supposed to have two that love us, and we only have one. Where the longing, if your dad had raised you, you'd be longing for a mom. But in this case, you had a mom, and so you long for a dad. That's probably why men get into room number 10 and women get into room number 5. You following me?
I understand.
Okay. Here's the task to fix this so you don't feel this and so this doesn't happen in your relationships. You must begin to let the healthy, loving, safe women into room 10.
Okay.
And when you do, and you take the chance and you say, you know, I'd really like to know you better and let's do stuff together and talk about what we're really afraid of, what we love, our passions, what our past, and you let women into that deep place, then the longing for the man gets healthier and it becomes a normal longing to get married, which is fine. But right now, men get in a special place that women shouldn't get in. You've got to have these same-sex healthy women in that same room. And you know what you'll find is that women will be drawn to you. And then you can make better decisions about a guy,
that's right,
get married, and have really healthy lives.
You know, John, you talk about this need-fear conflict. Kind of the Cosmopolitan magazine cover title of this is Desperately Seeking Something Else, something other than I have. If she's alone, she feels desperate. When she gets close, she feels desperate to get out. And that's a horrible place to be, Tanya. And I really do believe that you finding the comfort of other women and risking telling them this is where I am, this is who I am, and seeing that they don't reject you and they want to accept you and build you up and help you, I think it's going to heal your life. I think it's going to be one of the most healing things you could possibly do.
And the other part of that, Tanya, is if there's any healthy guys around you that are, there's no dating possibility at all, you know, a mature, I don't know, an uncle or a friend at church or a pastor or somebody like that, spend some time with that person and let that person kind of fill up the dad hole, and that takes a lot of the pressure off the things with the guys, too. Mm-hmm. I want to send you a copy of Best Friends Forever, and it talks about all that stuff.
All right, so we're going to send you Best Friends Forever for them, and then I'm going to send you Is This the One? I think that's going to be a big help in your dating life because it's going to help you make good decisions before you let that guy into level number 10, as John's talking about. And so we'll send both of those to you. Is This the One? And How to Be a Best Friend Forever.
You know, Steve, the Bible talks about this in Psalm 68. where David says that God puts the lonely in families.
Yeah.
When we didn't have a parent, we've got to have those people around us in non-dating, non-sexual, non-romantic ways to fill up the hole, and things get a lot better.
When I was dating, I was grateful to have you and Henry and Mylon and Dave and all the others around me that could help put into my life before I went out and started dating and trying to make decisions that would impact the rest of my life. You need those people around you. Let's go to Laura from Linthicum, Maryland. WAVA is the station. Hello, Laura.
Hello, Steve and John. How are you?
Speak right up there. We're having a little difficulty hearing you in a muffled-sounding phone. Hi.
I'm sorry. How are you guys?
Good.
Oh, that was 100 times better, Laura.
Yeah. What's going on?
I have a question. I was wondering what the Bible says about bodybuilding and the Christian life in terms of competing in the bodybuilding competition, like more like the figure aspect of the bodybuilding competition.
Are you a bodybuilder?
Well, yes, but I was thinking of entering the figure portion of it, not so much over the top.
The what portion?
That. Senior portion of it, did you say?
Figure. They have several divisions, so there is bodybuilding, and there is figure, and there is fitness. I was thinking of entering the figure portion of it.
Uh-huh. Okay. And yes, so you want to know if we think it's Christian to be in that kind of competition.
Why would you be concerned, Laura?
Because the getting on stage and in a bikini and being judged and all of that.
Being judged? What do you mean by being?
Yeah. Well, being scrutinized, if I should say,
the competition has judging, right?
Yes, it has a judging portion. Yes,
right. So what is your concern about whether it's okay to be judged or not, or scrutinized? What's the question about that?
I guess it's not so much that as it is being on stage in a bikini. Really, I don't know if it's appropriate. I really would like to do it, but I don't know how.
Well, there are bikinis. And there are bikinis, so you know. So how covered up are you when you're up on that stage?
Fairly covered up. I mean, just like on the beach, I suppose.
Yeah.
Fairly covered up.
Yeah. Well, there are certain things that people get involved with where they're not. You know, they don't wear much, whether it's volleyball or track or whatever. I mean, you really can't judge a person unless you cross a line, and I hope you're not crossing that line. You can't really judge modesty based on the athletic costume a person's wearing. The old Olympics, they wore nothing. I'm not endorsing that at all, but I think you have to make – this is one of those things where you have to judge for yourself whether or not you are inciting lustful things because the way in which you present yourself and the way you look on that stage is sensual versus an athletic experience for somebody. I think you have to evaluate that. I'm not saying you're responsible for evil thoughts of other people, but, you know, people dance and they're professional dancers. And sometimes a costume is just a costume, and other times a costume is something that's a little too revealing. And I don't know that we can make that judgment for you now.
Yeah, Laura, I think that, you know... The whole idea of, like, causing someone to stumble, because the Bible says we're not supposed to make someone stumble, a lot of that has to do with being in a position where, you know, the context that you live in causes someone to stumble. What if you're wearing a burqa and looking at your ankle caused a guy to stumble? You hear about that. Well, how can that be your fault? You know, you're wearing a burqa, right? And so I like what Steve says, that look at the context. This is not a... You know, how to look, you know, sexual and how to look, you know, sexually exciting. This is an athletic an event that takes a lot of training, just like the volleyball thing. And so as long as you're sort of like, if your intent and how you dress there is about being competitive and being excellent, I think we need Christians in all kinds of events like that, as long as there's something that's not going to, you know, hurt somebody else, you know, morally or anything like that. So I'd kind of stay in those norms.
Okay. Does that help?
Okay.
We hope you win, Laura.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that we really helped there, John. I feel a little inadequate to make the call there. I believe in modesty. I certainly do.
But when you turn on those shows, bodybuilding shows, it's like you said, Steve, it's like in volleyball, they're trying to figure out anatomy, physiology. They're trying to figure out, what do you call it? Not how cut someone is, but definition, all those issues. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what that thing is for.
Yeah.
It's not designed to, you know, arise sexual kind of stuff. So I think she's fine if she stays in the normal. That's what that should be about.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a break. I'm going to send her a copy of Walking Into Walls. I hope that will be helpful to her. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more. I've got 10 tips for healthy grieving for you. Call us for me.
I did come into the weekend with an expectation to sort out probably something that couldn't be fixed.
The New Life Intimacy and Marriage Workshop is coming to Washington, D.C., July 20th to the 22nd.
There is a third person in our marriage, and it's not Jesus. It's a voice that is harsh, and it's put a wall between us.
Join Steve Arterburn.
I'm going to be talking about 7 different secrets from the Mediterranean. You do these, and they lead you to a life of passion and meaning and romance and deep, intimate connection.
And Mylon and Kay Yurkovich.
We're going to be talking about the emotional, sexual, and relational journey that all couples go on over the course of a lifetime together.
To register or to find out more, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or go to newlife.com.
I really feel like we have somewhere to go and a future, and we have hope.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Last year, after Every Man's Battle, I was so moved by the transformation that I saw, not only in myself, but in the guys in our small group and the other people that were there and the stories that I heard, that I decided to go ahead and join Club New Life as a contributor to that.
You can help New Life Live stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
You guys are doing God's work here. You're restoring marriages. You're giving people hope. It's just been such a blessing to me, and I just wanted to encourage you all. When you see something good that God's doing, just jump on that and help support that.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433.
Give your support to them if you can, and just help them do what God's doing here in the world.
Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today. We'd love to hear from you. You can write us at P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. Let's go to Allison from Tucson, Arizona, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hi, Allison.
Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm okay. I have a question about marriage and myself. I feel very alone in my marriage, and I'm wondering if I leave my husband, if I'll continue feeling alone.
Yes.
Yes, I will?
Yes, there's the simple answer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let's talk about your marriage. What happened here? What's going on in the marriage?
Let's see, we've been married 18 years. Mm-hmm. We don't have any children. My husband is 9 years younger than I am, and he doesn't take responsibility for anything that has to do with me. I'm pretty much on my own as far as financially and health wise and my car and just decision making in general. And so I feel pretty alone. And
Allison, those are those are not really relational things that make people lonely, though. Those are what you would call the functional things, not the relational things, such as money and car and health and that sort of thing. They're important, but they're not the center part of the relationship. So can you speak to y'all's emotional connectedness?
I don't think there is any emotional connectiveness, really. I think we're just two people living in this house, and I feel overburdened by the responsibilities that I... I'm responsible for. I feel like his mother.
Okay.
Well, now, have you done anything to try to repair it over these years?
Well, I've gone to counseling. I've been in counseling quite a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked him if he will go. This last year, I told him that if we didn't get marriage counseling, I was going to leave. And he agreed to go to counseling. But we only went for about 3 months, and then nothing came of that, and we stopped going.
Why did that break down? What happened in the session that broke down?
The man that was counseling us took a vacation, and we missed an appointment, and then when we got back, the connection between the receptionist and us was broken down, and we never pursued looking into why. I didn't think we were making any progress.
Okay, Allison, let me just give you my 2 cents, and then I'll turn you over to John. Okay. But this is an 18-year marriage. You're older than him, right? You're 9 years older than him, and you're complaining about feeling like his mother.
Right.
But wouldn't you say that much of the relationship, you kind of acted like a mother?
Yes.
You were the responsible person.
Right.
So we call that enabling his irresponsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that you have a responsibility under God in marriage to go back and try to undo that, which was you could kind of say in a crass way, you trained him to be like a baby or a little boy in the relationship, and now there needs to be a time of untraining, and you're going to have to get some help, I believe, if you're going to re-energize your love for him and your commitment to this marriage. Because he's got a chance here that he could really grow into be a great man and a great husband, but not after being in a relationship where he's been allowed to live like this for so long. John, your thoughts?
Yeah, Allison, you have a very kind of a gentle, quiet tone. Is that how you speak to him?
I try to.
Yeah, I think it's a problem.
Oh, okay.
That... if I were your husband and I was kind of a little boy who hasn't grown up, and every now and then you said, I might leave if we don't get counseling, I'd feel like, okay, I can wait her out. I'll play video games until she's done. I have a way for you to approach this, and I think there's something that will be more productive. In terms of the way that God developed relationships is that we have to escalate according to the importance of the need. If you go, for example, to Matthew 18, where Jesus says, if your brother sins against you, confront him. If he doesn't listen, go bring your two or three. If he doesn't listen, bring the whole church. In other words, there's this escalation of intensity if somebody's sort of in denial. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
And I think that you need to look at this as, let's suppose that your husband weighed 300 pounds and the next donut he eats is going to put him into a cardiac arrest. You wouldn't probably say, you know, Sam, I've been thinking about this. This might be a good idea. You'd be saying, I've got to shake you. We're in trouble. It's you know, it's 911, Sam, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Your marriage weighs 300 pounds, and one more donut is going to make it all go away. I need for you to increase the intensity and the plea and the vulnerability and everything the way the Bible says. And so the guy's not beating you. He's not, you know, having affairs. He's passive and he's a little boy. And so go to him and say, We're living like two zombies, and I need desperately for you to stay with me in marital therapy for a year. And if it's the wrong therapist, we'll find somebody else. But I need to find this because everything's falling apart and I'm lonely and unhappy. And add to the intensity of your need for him and the severity of the problem. And then see what happens. I just got a feeling since you're kind of a nice, kind person, you probably are a tad passive and you kind of gave up too easily. And I need for you to drive this like you would drive a 911 alarm.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
Hi, this is Steve Arterburn, and for 30 years, New Life has been the most trusted name in Christian counseling.
I'm an addict, and I'm trying to get God in my life again. You seem to be able to get to the crux of a problem quickly.
Our Christ-centered treatment programs can help you break free to embrace all that God has for you and your family.
I just want to thank you guys for bringing me to a relationship with Jesus.
There really is help for marital problems, depression, addictions, panic attacks, and feelings of hopelessness.
I came back with so many tools to help me prepare myself to fight this struggle and this battle that I have every day.
You can start living again today, living the life God intended for you. Help is available at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
They did care, and they did follow up very lovingly, and it made all the difference in my life.
Call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Someone who cares is waiting at the other end of the phone. God can open the door to a better tomorrow right now. Just call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
Find out more information about New Life or any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to the program.
We are back. Let's go over here to Sue from Boston, Massachusetts, W-E-Z-E. Hello, Sue.
Okay.
Hi. Okay. Hi.
I was checking my husband's phone, and there was a text that he sent to somebody that said, "I love you."
Oh, ooh, gosh. Sorry.
Ooh. Ouch. Oh, wow. That's horrible.
How has that affected you inside?
Really bad. Like, I can't even... I barely can get through the day.
Yeah. Sorry.
Did you talk to him about it?
Yeah. I approached him. I approached him probably not the right way. I woke him up from a sound sleep after... He had been out maybe drinking a little too much, and he just went crazy and left for the night, and it was kind of bad. My 19-year-old daughter was here, and she was devastated. And then the next day he came back and said that, it really wasn't anything that, he's going to end it, and he said he did end it, and he just said, we've just kind of... He's just had no. I don't really talk to him that much, and so it's just somebody to listen to him and talk to him. So,
So how can we help you?
I just don't know what to do. I just don't know. Yeah, I don't know what I should do about the whole thing. I'm really kind of like easygoing too, so I kind of just let things just blow over and.
Mm-hmm. But not this.
I know.
You can't let this blow over.
Yeah, you're in a crisis, Sue, and the text, which if you're going through his phone, it tells me you are probably already suspicious of something, otherwise you wouldn't be doing that. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay, and where did you get those suspicions?
Well, we just went out one night for dinner. I mean, it's just like, and he it seems like when we go out to dinner, he likes to, like, drink a lot before we go out, and then he's usually in a pretty good mood, and I usually don't like him very much when he's like that, so I'm not too friendly with him. And
but what gave you the suspicion of other women being involved?
Well, we went out that one night, and he said, oh, I think I need some time, some space. And, you know, he said, oh, maybe there is somebody. What if there was, or something like that. Somebody just...
Okay, so he's already telling you.
Yeah, I guess, and I didn't want to believe it.
Okay. All right, well, look at this as a signal. You know, the Bible tells us to look for fruit in our lives. In Matthew 7, Jesus said, a good tree makes good fruit, a bad tree makes bad fruit. What the text and his acting out is telling you is that there's some bad fruit in your marriage that needs to be repaired. So you need to take your marriage to a hospital and get to counseling, and that's a requirement. And to tell him that you're going to put together a game plan with the counselor about how to heal you and how he's got to face whatever he's got to face, and that's what counselors are trained to do.
Right, but I honestly don't think he would. Like, he's very strong-willed, like, so strong-willed, and I'm just so the opposite. Like, if I brought that up, that he needed counseling, or we needed counseling, he would probably freak out.
Have you read Boundaries in Marriage?
Excuse me?
Have you read the book Boundaries in Marriage?
No.
Okay, we've got a whole book we'll send to you about that, but here's the idea, Sue, is the easygoing, I'll just kind of live past it, will never work, and the statistics would say that if you do that, something's going to happen again and again and again, and that hurt that you're experiencing is going to get worse, and no one would ever want that for you or for the marriage. So since he wants to ignore it and say it's all over, I'll never deal with this, you must be the one that says something must change. And so if he says, I don't need counseling or want counseling, number one, Sue, easygoing people don't push hard enough for counseling. Steve and I have been doing this show a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody will say, well, do you want to go counseling? No, I'd never do that. And then they say, I tried. No, you don't try. That's when you get back in their face and say, you don't understand. I am miserable. I am so unhappy. I'm so lonely. I'm so broken. And they really push their agenda for the first time in their life, and they get their voice going. So you really have to escalate this as opposed to just asking one time. Then there are some men that still say, no matter how hurt their wife is and how broken she is, that they still don't care enough to go to counseling, then you have to start setting limits. Have you ever heard of the book Boundaries or the word Boundaries?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Okay, the book we're going to send you has specific boundaries to start to set with him if you will not go to counseling, which are tailored to get him to counseling. Like, Sam, the things that you want from me, this is a little thing from you, but it's a big thing to me, and the things that you want from me, my warmth and time with me and intimacy, they're going to start going away as I'm going to, like, withdraw from you because I can't trust you and I don't know you anymore. And those boundaries are not designed to punish Sam. They're designed to take the good things away from the marriage so that he sees, to get those good things back, I must go to counseling. Does this make any sense?
It does. Makes a lot of sense.
The third thing is, you're not strong enough to do this by yourself. You're mm-hmm. an easygoing person who's probably non-confrontive, and sounds like he's pretty good on that.
Yeah.
So you need a support system. You need a good small group of women, a Bible study, a good counselor. But you've got to be around people who, when he says, you know, he blows up at you again, instead of crumbling and feeling devastated, they say, Sue, you did the right thing. We'll back you up. Do it again. So you need your cheering section. So we need for you to construct that too. And that's kind of the formula that makes husbands who want to blow off an affair finally break and go get help. That's what works.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right, Sue. I'm glad that you called us. I'm going to send you Healing is a Choice also. I hope that will be of blessing to you, Sue. All right. Let's go to, how about Lou from Tyler, Texas, Sirius Satellite Radio. Hi, Lou.
Hi.
Hi there.
My question is, I'm 79 years old. I'm a widow for almost 5 years, and I would like a male companion. I haven't been successful, so I got on Christian Mingle, and the problem I'm having is that my profile says I'm a Christian,
yeah,
and that I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, and that's very important to me.
Right.
Then I'll get an email from some gentleman, And they'll be coming on kind of strong, and it sounds like they're interested in physical, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it scares me. So I immediately email back and say, be sure to look at my email, my profile.
Yeah.
And I need to tell you straight out that there will be no premarital sex. And as soon as I do that, I don't hear from them anymore.
Yeah.
So now I'm wondering, should I not do that? Should I wait until I meet them face to face?
Lou, how many times has this happened so far, would you say?
I would say at least 3 times.
Okay. And have there been any times when a guy said something about sex and you came back with an appropriate biblical response and he still came back? Or has every guy that you've had to say that with never come back, all three?
Right. That's right.
Okay. That means the system is working like the system's supposed to work. Now, I think it's kind of being closed if a guy never talks about that and you say, oh, by the way, because mm-hmm. I think that's kind of an anxiety-driven thing, which can sound sort of like controlling and rigid.
Right.
But yeah, if the guy's bringing up sex, I think you got to set a line and say, hey, Sam, you know, that's not what I do premarital. And I think the filtering system worked like it should. So you had 3 bad apples, and those 3 apples went away. But that's not how all guys are.
Well, really, they don't talk about sex, but they talk about, I'm very affectionate, I'm very romantic, I like to cuddle and that kind of thing. And immediately I get scared.
Oh, yeah. I'll be interested to see what Steve says, because I'd be okay with that part.
Yeah, see, okay. I don't think I'd come back with... by the way, you know, I don't want to have any kind of sex because I think your stand is correct, but it might be communicated in a way that would say to them, this woman is emotionally unavailable,
yeah.
locked up, or, you know, whatever.
Okay.
So you might want to back away a little bit from just throwing that right out there because, you know, if you're 78 and you're going to be dating men that age, well, they are going to want to cuddle. They are going to want to have some hugs. And
I don't mind cuddling either. I guess
okay.
I just get scared.
Yeah. Well, give them a chance.
Okay, let me give you one more advice, Lou, is when the guy says that I'd like to cuddle, blah, 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 then your response is, yeah, that's great. By the way, what are your interests? What are your passions? And kind of find out what the guy's DNA is. So give him like a two-word answer. But don't stay there with them because you don't get to know anybody through that kind of stuff. You get to know through their character,
right.
their relationships, their values, their interests. So you just guide the conversation so you're on the hunt for information. You just go into the information.
Right. Yeah. And I'm going to send you a copy of the book, Is This the One? And it'll give you some stuff to do on your dates other than cuddle. I mean, cuddling can be there at the end. But it's got some, I was just reading the review on Amazon. And it was talking about how this really can help you get to know a person if you'll just do the things that the dating book tells you to do. Is this the one coming your way? And I'm so glad that you called. That's a tough age to be dating, and I appreciate you persevering, hanging in there.
You're a great model for all the other folks out there who are moving up and saying, yeah, there's still dating and excitement. So way to go, Lou.
My story includes multiple physical and emotional affairs.
Every day, men struggle with sexual integrity. Impure thoughts, strip clubs, pornography.
My wife found out that I had betrayed her. She insisted that I would go to the everyman's battle. I had some idea, perhaps, of what to expect, but I had no idea that it would have the impact on me that it did. There's just something about the way that you meet in a large group and then the smaller breakout groups. And the sharing is just something that I've never experienced before.
To register or to find out more, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433 or log on to newlife.com.
This is the first time in my life that I ever felt comfortable in sharing the real me with other men. In my mind, it is one of the most critical things that a guy can do in his recovery.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Every time we try to talk, it just turns into a fight. I am so tired of arguing.
I don't understand. God, why did you take him from me?
I don't want my kids to think of me as the angry dad. Why can't I control my temper?
I feel like he's more like my roommate than my husband.
How did we become this distant?
I hate looking in the mirror. No matter what I try, nothing seems to work.
I just feel like my world is spinning out of control.
I feel so broken. Could God ever heal me?
Is it ever going to get better?
I feel like I'm drowning.
When will I learn to just breathe again?
It doesn't have to be this way. 48 hours can change your life. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
Glad you joined us for this classic program from the archives of New Life Live. If you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to the program.
We're back. Let's talk with Tiffany from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, WFIL. Hi, Tiffany.
Hi.
Hey there.
Can y'all hear me?
Yes, we can. Fine.
Okay. I watched the show Criminal Minds, right?
Yeah.
And they would always use the word a narcissist. And I used to ask people what it meant. Nobody really knew what it meant. And then I brought the book, Is This the One?
Mm-hmm.
And I read that. I believe I'm on the borderline of being a narcissist.
Really?
I don't think, yeah. The only part that didn't apply to me was the part that being insensitive, because I am sensitive, but a lot of it applies to me. So what do I do to address that or to get better? I mean, now it seems like every time I talk on the phone, I try to watch and listen and try to watch what I say. Or
well, Steve wrote that book. Which aspects of Steve's description seem to fit you?
The part that he was talking about, how you keep turning, like if you're talking to someone on the phone, you're turning the conversation back to you. It seems like it's always about me and what I'm doing, or it's like whenever I'm talking to someone, more like, you know, it's always end up, no matter what, if someone say, oh, I had a wonderful day today, then I'll be like, want to spawn them, and sometimes I see myself saying things to I think that sometimes I help people to get to feel better about me, so they can say, oh, good.
So are you saying that you're just not that into, you're not into other people, you're not interested in them, and you're not expressing your interest in them?
It seems like I express my interest in other people, but sometimes lately it seems like the conversation and stuff be like, sometimes I'll do things and it seems like I'll manipulate to like get someone to like go out with me. Like one time I told this guy it was my birthday was coming up, which it wasn't, and so he'd take me out to eat or whatever.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't see you, Tina. I don't see you as narcissistic. I see you as dependent. I said, I don't see you as narcissistic. I see you as dependent.
Oh.
It would be rare that a narcissist would raise their hand and say, hey, help me change. Because that might
be. Oh, okay.
Let me give you the difference, Tina.
Tell me.
A narcissist says, other people exist to serve me and how special I am. A dependent says, I feel empty and unloved, and I don't feel good about myself, so maybe other people can help me feel better. I like people, but I do make it about me because I feel empty and lonely inside. Do you see the difference?
Yeah, that's the second one. It's me.
You're feeling that. Tell us about that feeling you're having right now.
I feel lonely, and I just feel like I don't have no one to love me.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, I reach out, and it's like nobody really wants to really be around me. I don't know whether it's me or what I say or what I do.
Yeah. But it feels
but
real.
It's like no one take an interest in me. Yeah. It's like I'm always taking interest in other people.
Right.
I'll reach go. I'll go to my NA meetings. I'll reach out. I'll get a lot of numbers. You know, I'll call them up. And you know, it's and I'm not saying that they're bad people. Mm-hmm. They're just probably busy. You know, they probably got their own lives. They probably have a lot of them is married. They have kids.
Tina,
boyfriends.
Tina, is that lifetime?
Huh?
Has that been occurring all of your life or just recently?
Well, all my life, ever since I was a child, like rejection and, you know, feeling rejected and abandoned and, you know, and just not loved. And
okay. Are you in a good church?
Yeah, I do have a church home.
Does the church have small groups?
I travel. I travel back and forth from Baltimore to Philadelphia, and a lot of times I end up in Philadelphia and I end up not being able to go to my church. I've been in my church for almost a year now.
Tina, God's solution is that when we have a lifetime of rejection, sometimes we feel like nobody's there for us. And God's solution is we've got to find people who, it says in Ephesians chapter 3, root us and ground us in love. You need to get either in a small group that you can meet regularly, or a pastor you can meet regularly, or a counselor you can meet regularly. But this has gone beyond friendships because your pain is so great. The dependency issue has to be met by getting people around you that you can be needy with and lonely with and talk about yourself for a certain amount of time, and that's okay. And that has to be done in those relationships. So we're going to leave you along the line and find some places for you, but somewhere where it's dedicated to you working out that loneliness, the dependency will then go away and you'll have great relationships, but you're not a narcissist.
Yeah, I'm glad you called so we could clarify that. That's wonderful. And
we'll send loving people too.
Okay. Coming your way. We're just about out of time. If you're in the Indy area, you know, I'm broadcasting here from WQME up in Anderson, but down there in Indianapolis at Heartland Church, I'm going to be preaching this Sunday for Father's Day. So come join us. You can find out all the information at newlife.com or heartland.com, heartlandchurch.com. Would love to have you there. We hope it'll be a great time. If anything that we've said has piqued your interest, if you want a resource, if you'd like to get a copy of these 10 tips for healthy grieving, it's 1-800-NEW-LIFE or go to newlife.com. That's the place to find all of that. And, you know, we're in the summer months, and summer's always tough for us because people go on vacation and they forget about supporting us. I'm asking that maybe you could step in for one of those folks this summer and help us by joining Club New Life or become part of our monthly giving program. It's really easy to do. You get lots of member benefits when you're a member of Club New Life. But maybe for this summer, it's a one-time gift. Maybe you could just come in and say, I've never supported anybody or never supported this ministry. And if God is leading you, just do it. Please do, because it makes all the difference in the world. This is the ministry that God is allowed to exist for almost 25 years now, so that not to make people feel better or happy, but to transform their lives and their relationships, to give them a new meaning and a new mission in life. That's what we do. And when it all comes down to it, and you hear of a couple that maybe they haven't, well, this one couple, haven't lived together in 2 years, and they come back together, and they find happiness in their marriage, or a couple that were literally divorcing out the door, and a pastor said, try this New Life thing, this weekend, try it, and see what happens. And they come and they, several months later, say we're in love once again. That's what New Life is for. You could help us by calling us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE or go to newlife.com. Please do. Thank you, Dr. John Townsend. Thank you to all of you who listen and watch and support us. We love you. We care about you. We want to be here for you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again on Monday for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.